And let's discuss this with Michael Irwin from Cranley, who's backing Noel, and also Dr. Peter Saunders, who's the campaign director at Care Not Killing. Michael and Peter, good morning to you both.
Morning.
Good morning, Danny.
Michael Irwin, would you like to go first? Do you support what Noel is trying to do here, do you?
Oh, very much so. And I'm delighted that he's been given, you know, permission to take his case now to the Court of Appeal, because this decision, from my point of view, confirms that our courts have the authority to decide that our present law, which forbids assisted dying, that the present law is incompatible with European human rights legislation. And I'd like to very quickly quote, it's just a short sentence, a statement by the European Court of Human Rights in April of 2002, when they said that, quote, many people are concerned that they should not be forced to linger on in old age or in states of advanced physical or mental decrepitude which conflict with strongly held ideas of self and personal identity, end quote. So I fully support the Noel Conway case, and I hope that he'll be successful in the forthcoming discussion in the courts.
Thanks, Michael Irwin. Peter Saunders, what do you think?
Well, as a doctor who's looked after many dying patients, I've got a huge amount of sympathy with Mr. Conway's personal plight in this whole thing, but I don't think that law should be changed, and that's the key issue here. Noel Conway went to the High Court last year, and his case was dismissed because they said that there was no incompatibility between his rights under the Human Rights Act to privacy and family life and the current law, which carries a blanket ban on assisted suicide. And I think that that this has been looked at many times. Parliaments in Britain have looked at it 10 times in the last 12 years. Every major disability rights group is against a change in the law. All the major doctors' groups, including the BMA and the Royal Colleges. And Parliament has been very strongly persuaded. The last attempt to change the law was the Maris Bill in 2015, where they voted by an overwhelming majority, all sides of the House, against a change in the law because of concerns about public safety. And at the heart of this whole issue is a balance of rights. And the concern that people have had is that if you change the law, you create a situation where you put pressure on vulnerable people to end their lives in fear of being a burden upon relatives or sick or mentally ill or being exploited or abused by someone who has something to gain financially or otherwise from their death.
And right, so you've
and
said
the whole
that
issues around safeguards that Parliament
yes.
has just not been convinced that the safeguards that have been proposed, all the ones that are being proposed now, are safe. And when we look at other jurisdictions, we find that the whole thing is uncontrollable in practice. And that's
complete
why the law
nonsense.
Should change.
Peter Saunders, Michael's now going to tell me why that is possible, right, Michael? And how it's
well,
possible.
I think what has just been, you've just heard, and I respect the views of Peter Saunders. We've often discussed this matter in the past. But we can look at other areas of the world. I mean, the Netherlands, in Belgium, and now in Canada, and in various U.S. states. You know, there's no evidence of abuse arising in these other jurisdictions. So if the laws can be successfully adopted and followed in these other countries, why the heck can we not do the same thing here?
Well, I'm not sure what glasses a doctor has on when he's looking at the Netherlands and Belgium, because it's precisely these jurisdictions that have worried lawmakers. And if you if you allow assisted suicide for any conditions at all, what inevitably happens is we get incremental extension. And what we've seen in the Netherlands and Belgium is that the law, which was initially only meant to apply to mentally competent terminally ill adults, has been extended to include the elderly, disabled, those with mental health problems like depression and anxiety, and even non-mentally competent children with diseases. So it's, I think, the best kind of law is the one that we have at the moment, which gives a blanket prohibition on all assisted suicide. It deters exploitation and abuse because of the penalties that it holds in reserve, but at the same time, it gives a huge amount of discretion to prosecutors and judges to to show mercy in hard cases, and I think that's the right kind of balance. Once you start chipping away and creating exceptions, you're on a slippery slope. You're on the path of incremental extension where vulnerable people can be exploited and abused.
So what does Noel Conway do? We heard him very clearly say there the effect that his disease has had on his life, and he's worried about his future quality of life and how he might spend his last years. So Michael Irwin, without a change in the law, which doesn't appear to be on the cards, what are his prospects? What could he do?
Well, I mean, I agree with some of the things that you've just heard from Peter Saunders. I mean, Noel Conway can stop taking oxygen, which he takes through his inhaler, and then good palliative care will control the symptoms that will then arise in the few days after he stops. So he'll be put into continuous deep sedation, and doctors will be liberal with various drugs like diamorphine, and he will then die that way. It's not, to me, a very dignified way. It'll take several days for that to happen. He should have the right, because of his terrible situation right now, to be able to take some medication that would quickly end his life in a matter of minutes. And again, you know, let's go back to other jurisdictions. Canada adopted a law only
Could we just stick with what happens in the UK? Because I don't want to complicate it by other countries, because we can only speak about the situation here. So, Peter Saunders, is that more or less hard on Noel Conway, having 3 days where he kind of slips away versus being medicated so he goes today, for instance?
Well, I think medicated so he goes today is a euphemism. What we're talking about is changing the law so that people can have help from doctors to kill themselves with lethal drugs. And that's
end result is that the same. By Friday of this week, it would be the same, wouldn't it? Let's just talk about, you know, what might happen.
But morally and ethically, killing a person is very different from allowing them to die peacefully with the best possible palliative care, which is what we do at the moment. I mean, you might be surprised to know there are about 5,000 people in Britain with motor neurone disease like Noel. 1,000 of them die every year, 3 every day. But it's only a very, very small handful and minority of these who want help to kill themselves. The vast majority will die. I'm not saying it's not a terrible disease. It is.
There's a man who knew he wanted to go skiing. He knew he wanted to climb. He knew he'd want to cycle. He knew he wanted to be a university lecturer. He achieved those things, but he can't make this decision for himself.
Well, the thing is that we don't live, no man is an island, and we don't live in isolation. And we value autonomy and freedom, but we also accept that part of living in a free democratic society is that personal freedom is not absolute, and we're not entitled to freedoms, however desperate we may feel, that are going to at the same time undermine the rights and freedoms of others. And that's the key issue here. It's about a balance of rights. And so I think the best approach is the very best palliative care, which is going to address his physical, social, psychological and spiritual needs. And the overwhelming number of people with terminal illnesses, including those with motor neurone disease, want assisted living. They don't want assisted dying.
Michael, you're a retired GP. So where do doctors stand on this? So how do doctors feel about the possibility of the law being changed and then being able to, if you like, administer these lethal doses?
That's a very good question. Now, it was a meeting of the annual meeting of the British Medical Association about 10 years ago, I think, in which they said there that doctors should take a neutral position and let Parliament decide about changing the law, because there had been a survey by the BMA which showed that doctors were divided almost 50-50 about the possibility. It boils down, Danny, to a matter of personal choice. And when Peter talks about the support of others around him, Noel Conway has the support of his wife, a very courageous lady, always stands by him and supports him and his family. So it should be a matter of personal choice as to how our lives end when we're terminally ill or very, very severely disabled, with good safeguards. And good safeguards are possible.
And Peter Saunders...
Just to clarify, the British Medical Association is opposed to a change in the law, and for only 1 year in its over 100-year history did it go neutral back in 2006.
I see. But the BMA is opposed. Let me suggest this to you, Peter Saunders. You're a doctor as well. If the law was changed and you could legally administer this drug and you know it was the choice of your patients, then you can administer that with a very clear conscience, can't you?
No. Personally, I would not participate, and many doctors wouldn't, even if the law did change. I mean, you might be aware
that... You'd give me paracetamol if I came to you with one problem. Why wouldn't you give me this other medicine?
Well, because doctors as professionals are bound by ethical codes which recognise the power they have that can be abused. And actually, euthanasia and assisted suicide are against the Hippocratic Oath. So it's quite different giving someone a tablet to relieve pain on the one hand and on the other giving them lethal drugs with the intention of killing them. That's a Rubicon that doctors should not be crossing, and that's still the majority opinion of the medical profession in 2018.
So two things would have to change: the law and the Hippocratic Oath.
But from my point of view, a good doctor does what is best for his or her patient.
And yes, doctors and break killing them is ever the best
and doctors
thing.
Break the law in this country. We have at least 1,000 cases every year in this country of voluntary euthanasia.
Oh, that's absolute nonsense, Michael, and you know that that's true. There are no figures confirming what you've just said. It's an absolutely fallacious claim you've just made.
It was a survey reported in the magazine Palliative Medicine a few years ago, by a survey that was done, I think, in 2006 and 2008, which showed that at least 1,000 cases a year of voluntary euthanasia take place, and the Palliative Medicine Journal reported on that survey.
Using what drug?
I don't know what drugs were used.
No, well, it shows you're not familiar with the paper, because that paper, I know the one you're referring to, did not confirm that there were cases of euthanasia involving people giving barbiturate drugs to kill people intentionally. What you're talking about is some doctors who were confused about the fact that they thought that they were killing people with morphine, when in actual fact, if you're giving morphine properly, the toxic dose will always be more than the therapeutic dose, which substantially relieves pain. So I think you're being a little bit disingenuous there.
Okay. This is a very complex issue. And I thank you both very much indeed for your insight into it. And I'll hand over to all our listeners now, if that's okay. Thank you very much indeed. Michael Irwin from Cranley and Dr. Peter Saunders, Campaign Director at Care Not Killing.